What about as far as seeking guidance from someone? Some people I come to hear about have a tendency to confuse just getting advice or maybe direction or something from someone, and they seem to attribute some sort of spiritual help actually from that person.
Even Baba lovers or even the mandali have to seek advice.
Yes.
So they go to the consultants, they go to lawyers and advocates and solicitors to seek advice, you see, in their day-to-day affairs. And very often when they go out searching for advice and seeking such people, they try to find out whether they would be of help to us or not, or they are there only for the sake of money to earn or not. So we drop such persons, and those who are genuinely to help us, naturally we recompense them with little gifts or their fees. We don't rush to pay the fees. But we try to find out whether they are genuine or not. So it is not necessary that we should totally abhor the concept of seeking advice or guidance from anybody. It's good, but one has to keep in mind properly that all our attention, all our adoration, all our admiration should be centered and focused on the Eternal Beloved.
I think that this is a really important message all over the world, because not only in other parts of the world, but even in, was it Mandapeta?
In India also, everywhere, amongst Mandali people also, time and again Baba would warn us, would tweak our ears, trying to bring home to us, remember, never accept homage, never feel or think that you are the guide for anybody, or that you become a master of anything. First of all, you have to master yourself in order to be a master for others. He said the same thing to Inayat Khan. Inayat Khan's disciple who had come, his son, Inayat Khan's son, Vilayat Khan. Yeah. Before being a master, you become master of yourself. Have mastery over yourself before trying to be a guide and master for others. So this is what he always does. So whomsoever he accepts as his own and wants them to become his close ones, to them he gives these warnings. He doesn't say to any general, any Tom, Dick and Harry, let them go their way. Well, they will learn one day, they will come to know about the truth. But those who come close to him in the orbit of his love, to them he warns. Yeah. Because he takes them to be his own. Yeah. Otherwise there's no need for these warnings. Yeah.
And some of those that weren't fortunate enough to hear those warnings, like this fellow in India, who has set himself up as a master,
yeah,
and a Baba lover at the same time, quoting Baba, people begin to revere him.
Yeah. So they revere him. And then that comes, that discourse that Baba has given some years ago, it is of help to those who want to know about more about what Baba says about these things. Why is it that Baba doesn't stop such people internally or out externally like that? Why is it? So he has given us a good explanation on that. Yeah. And there is that discourse. In three parts the discourse is there. Well, see, if you were to refer to Awakener 1958, Spatial Sahavas Issue, Volume 5, Number 3, The Play of the Ego is the title of it, page 26-29. And there are, the play of the ego is in three parts, part 1, part 2 and part 3. But know one thing, Baba has given us a nice little prayer, so to say. It's all, the whole thing is there in it. And what he would want us to repeat time and again in our leisure or whenever we are in a mood to do so. And so apt also, so full of truth. And this is what it is. I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not this, I am not that, I am nothing but a living lie of that truth that is me. And unless the lie is dead, the truth cannot be. So all emphasis Baba wants us to efface ourselves, our lower self, our ignorant self that asserts that I am Eras, I am Steve, I am this, I am that. Baba wants that that should be weakened and eventually effaced totally. The last vestige of all impressions of your false assertions must be erased totally. And God, the truth, is imminent there. It emanates forth. It's there, it's present. So that's why Baba has said, and I again repeat, that God can never be found because he is never lost. This is what Baba has said. All that is needed is not to find God, but to lose yourself. What is needed is that you lose yourself. And how will you lose yourself? By dropping down from the top of the mountain or drowning yourself in the depths of the ocean? No. To lose yourself by becoming the dust at his feet in the process of effacement, and love for him will make you do so. Not search for the truth. Keep search for the truth in abeyance. It will follow you when you begin to love him. It will haunt you, but don't care for it, because truth will become self-evident eventually when you get absorbed and merged in the ocean of his love. Because in the process of searching for the truth, you'll get yourself entangled with all sorts of challenges, and you'll feel all the more that how strong you are. Your falseness will begin to assert with greater and greater force, rather than becoming feeble and weaker, and eventually effacing. It will continue to assert itself. So it is better, more forceful, more helpful, to become the dust at his feet, rather than to become a great sage as a seeker of truth. This is what he says in a nutshell.
So one must be broken down from their confidence in themselves, from their strengths, and they must also be broken down from their weaknesses. They must be relinquished those as well.
Of course, everything. But broken down confidence and all, no, you should have greater confidence by becoming the dust at his feet, you see. Confidence in your true self gets stronger and stronger as your lower self becomes weaker and weaker. It is not that you develop a sort of an inferiority complex. No, no, it's not that. You have not to develop any complex whatsoever. You have to become the dust at his feet, you see. Neither superiority complex or inferiority complex or any complex whatsoever. You have nothing to do with complexes and confidences. All that you have to do is to see to your daily life, live a life, simple, normal, most natural daily life, and time and again dedicate all your acts, all your speech, all your thought to him. On the vast ocean, in the early years, those who were in the ship, they always follow the star, the pole star that never changes its position. They know, and they would take their bearings according to the pole star. So that's how he should remain in our search in total darkness as the pole star. We will be tossing in the storms of the sea. There will be lot of things happening to us, lot of anxieties and fright and all that. But our ship can be easily guided in proper direction if we continue to have our gaze, our awareness, our consciousness focused on that which is eternal, unchangeable, and that is Him, the Absolute Truth. But that cannot be conceived, that cannot be approached. So He makes it conceivable and approachable by assuming this human form, and He comes in our midst time and again to help us out of it, to direct us, encourage us, comfort us. That's why He's known as the Comforter, Director, Helper, Redeemer, and so forth. But this time He has said that He is the same Ancient One. All these conflicts were because, well, the Christians thought that Jesus was their only Christ. Zoroastrians thought that Zoroaster was their only prophet. Muhammad was the only prophet for the Muslims, and Buddha the only enlightened one for them. But He comes again and again. In the words of Krishna, you see that He will come again. In Buddha, there will be the enlightened one come again. And even Jesus has said that I will come again. He has promised. So, coming again means He has already come and gone, but He'll come again. After Jesus the Christ, He fulfilled His promise that He'd come again. The second advent took place as Muhammad. But then also, those who were expecting Him, well, you may call, He didn't hoodwink anybody. He was there. But our ignorance hoodwinked us. So while He was as Muhammad, again in our midst, we continue to expect Him to come from the clouds. Then after Muhammad, Meher Baba came. And again our ignorance hoodwinked most of us. And we again hope that He would be coming and all. After He passes away from our midst, eventually, then again there will be another advent which He has promised that He would come after 700 years. And when He comes, even those who believe in Meher Baba, and knowing that Meher Baba said that He would come after 700 years, they will say that, well, there will be many who will say that, well, in the beginning they will have to say that, well, our love for Meher Baba is such, how is it possible for us to accept somebody else? Again His advent is there, our ignorance again hoodwinks us, and then we long for Him after He has parted from us. So that's His game. But for He says that He comes for all, but He is for the few. So those few whom He has in His heart, He touches their heart and awakens them to the reality that He has come in their midst, and they follow Him. And that procession, as ages pass by, becomes bigger and bigger who follow Him in one form or the other. But they follow Him. But then in our following Him, we follow Him sometimes the way that He wants us to follow, and sometimes we make Him follow us. And that's where the trap is. Religions crop up, dogmas are there, churches are built, temples are there, mosques are built and all that, trying to edify Him. But we forget Him and we adore the mansion of the Lord. As Baba Himself has put it very humorously, says, you pray with great devotion, and you remember to pray. But while pouring out your devotion, you pour out your devotion into the prayer, but you forget the Lord for whom you pray, or to whom you pray. You remember the prayer and forget the Lord. That's how we live. And that's how man is susceptible to his weaknesses in the act of his devotion, very act of his devotion, let alone those who are steeped in materialism. But here, those who are really devoted, they also get misled like that because of our false assertions. I am the one who devotedly prays to Him. I have not forgotten Him. I am the one. See, that's happened, the assertions. So all this can be transcended or done away with by remaining most natural, simple, holding on to his dharma and relying totally upon him. That's what he says by holding on to his dharma. Have complete reliance as a child would have for his or her mother. And one will be constantly where the mother is. And another thing Baba has told us, why? Do you mean to say that those in the world at present or in the past or in the future who assert and will assert that they are masters, they want to, they just assert that way? No, but what happens is that they do have some experiences, you see, some supernatural experience they have, and they feel that they have the ultimate experience of truth. That's why they're deluded into believing that they have got in their hands the goal, which is not so. Baba says, if you wish to know that when you experience certain thing, if you wish to know that is it an experience of reality, so when you have such an experience and it's a continuous experience without a break, mind you, not a continual, he would say that. There is a difference between continuous and continual. Continual has a break. Mm-hmm. Time and again I will see Baba's manifestation and then it will fade out. So that is continual. Again I will see and again he will fade out. But continuous is, he is there all the time. The reality is there in face to face all the time. So that experience, which is a continuous experience without a break, is the ultimate experience. Because it is the experience of the eternal. And when the eternal is experienced, you can't have breaks in there. But so what happens, unfortunately, with people who believe that they are masters and they genuinely believe it? Why? Because they had that experience. But it's not the ultimate. And Baba warns them and warns those who follow them. Beware of such things. It's a trap for the master as well as for the disciple. So that's why that discourse that Baba has given is very helpful. What? Truth eludes us, Baba says, because it's so simple. It is so self-evident. That's why it eludes us. And mind goes on digging and trying to fathom something. If it is like this, it's just given on a platter. You say, how is it possible? Is this the truth? So it will try to find out. It will try to find out the origin of the platter. It will try to find out the origin of the person who is holding me this. And it goes on and on and on and on. And when he goes on trying to find the origin of the platter, he begins to dig a mine from where the platter and how was it made and who was the potter and his ancestry and all that sort of thing. Mind delights in such things, making it more and more complicated and difficult. Simple truth is self-evident. It's so simple, so easy, approachable. That's what he says.